We're in the Congressional Corner with Congressman Mark Molinaro in his first term representing New York's 19th District. He's a Republican. We spoke in our last conversation about the debt ceiling. In the end, a deal was struck and the U.S. avoided default. You were a strong yes on the package, I think it's fair to say. How come?
Well, first, because by design or default, Americans have elected a bipartisan government, and therefore a bipartisan solution was necessary. It's what members like me advocated for and, frankly, worked very hard to deliver. And we've delivered the largest spending cut in history initiated by Congress that confronts inflation fueled by federal spending. We make good on America's debts, which we must, and at the same time, we invest in economic growth, making economic development projects a little bit easier while protecting the most vulnerable, enhancing the way in which we deliver food stamps and TANF assistance by demanding that states are more accountable with federal dollars and helping people. And I'd like to get back to that in a moment, but just to say that the fact that there are those on either end of the ideological spectrum that have a problem with this agreement suggests that it is what Americans expect, bipartisan answer to a bipartisan problem that has been fueled by generations of overspending. And frankly, I think we've delivered a bill that sets the framework for both how we can negotiate a deal in the future, two branches of government, two different parties, with a president of a different party from us in the majority in the House, and at the same time reach an agreement that makes the federal government more respectful of taxpayers.
The Congressional Budget Office says it will cut about $1.5 trillion over the next decade. Is that an adequate number in your view?
I don't think that it is adequate, but it is appropriate, and it's the best we could expect in a negotiation between two branches of government, different parties, and two houses of Congress, different parties. I also begin to wonder, this is not to undermine the CBO, but to suggest that everybody sees things a little bit differently. They score stuff, I should say, a little bit differently down here in Washington. What I'd offer to you is that we do set in motion a few reforms that actually we think will grow economic opportunity. I know it because I've experienced it myself at the local level with economic development projects and administering a social service agency. I think there's going to be economic growth that will help us combat both inflationary spending and debt in the long term. That's not really scored. And so I will tell you that this sets the right foundation upon which we ought to build more responsibility from Washington and more respect for federal taxpayers.
There's been some talk about doing away with the debt limit in general. Do you think that's a good idea?
No. I think at the end of the day, the founders were pretty smart in ensuring that Congress, has the purse strings and allowing debt to simply extend without some oversight and some restriction from Congress. And by the way, Congress, the people's representatives, is a mistake. And by the way, we lived through, during the pandemic and economic shutdown, the extreme of executive overreach. And I'm not saying in every situation that would occur, but I can say as an executive, the more authority and power you give an executive, the more they'll take. And being the single individual elected in mass, that needs to be balanced by the people through their representatives having some checks and balances, and this is an appropriate one.
Do you worry, though, that this has merely kicked the can down the road to another sort of standoff or brinksmanship January 2025?
Want to worry, that's the reality, but if you were to eliminate Congress's role, all that does is kick the can down the road forever. If you allow presidents to simply make those choices without legislative oversight, then there's just going to be executive-driven spending and no real consideration for the impact and the voice of the people individually. And that I think, is an appropriate reality of the Constitution and the way in which the founders developed this government. But of course, it kicks the can. With some restrictions, it kicks the can. And frankly, we all have a responsibility now to find new ways to respect taxpayers, to drive down spending, to drive down debt. And we need to do that in the context of a bipartisan government. And of course, there'll be elections in the meantime, and the public will have a say as to how they want to proceed. But we cannot sustain the rate of spending. We cannot continue to mortgage our children and grandchildren's future. And we cannot have a system of government that just doesn't respect the use of dollars that we just don't have. And so there needs to be that reality. And frankly, I think we set the framework and the expectation now that there needs to be more respect for taxpayer dollars.
Would there be any scenario in which you could support changing tax rates, maybe doing away with the Trump tax cuts, or looking at how revenue gathering influences long-term deficit?
Well, I come to the table with the basic expectation and feeling that the federal government doesn't have a revenue problem. It has a spending problem. And so I've never started the conversation by how much more can I raise or lower taxes. I start the conversation by how much can I lower spending. And so I do, and then let that fuel tax policy. Some of those tax, the Trump tax cuts, some of those sunset and some of them, will be considered for extension. That needs to happen in the context of budgeting, and that's what happens next. And so in a bipartisan way through House appropriations and the work that we do here, we're going to have to develop a spending plan that drives down spending and respects taxpayers. And what that results in revenue, we hope, is less demand, less need for federal tax dollars.
You know, there is a lot of conjecture about Speaker McCarthy maybe facing a revolt from the right flank of the party during the course of these negotiations. How do you think he did, dealing with President Biden, largely in a one-on-one sort of negotiation?
He did exceptionally well. And what I say to people who have concern, and I get it, first of all, that kind of argument is a bit foolish, and I hate to say it that bluntly, but here's the thing. The Republicans have a small majority in one branch of one house of government. The Speaker, on behalf of the American people, presented our argument, and it resulted in a historic spending cut. It resulted in not defaulting on America's debts. It resulted in addressing inflation and federal spending that fuels inflation. It resulted in protecting Social Security and Medicare. It resulted in protecting veterans' benefits, and at the same time sets the framework for both future negotiation and a respect of federal taxpayer dollars. And that, to me, is a success worth acknowledging. And for some, it's not enough. That's fine. For some, it's too much. That's fine. At the end of the day, recognizing that by design or default, we have this bipartisan government with bipartisan solutions that are necessary. I think the reality is we delivered a success for the American people, and now we ought to be building on it. And I think that's important. By the way, there are people out there who say, you guys shouldn't have voted for the first thing, and then you shouldn't have voted for the second thing. Here's the deal: we armed the Speaker with a powerful message that taxpayer dollars ought to be respected, knowing full well he would have to negotiate from there. And I've got a great respect for the team that led us. Garrett Graves and Patrick McHenry are dutiful, they're responsible, and ultimately I think produced a good product for America.
Just in the time we have left in this segment, I want to go back to SNAP benefits and the new work requirements for older recipients of SNAP benefits. Can you explain why Republicans favored that change as part of this package?
Listen, I grew up on food stamps. It is an assistance program meant to help people establish their own independence. And the states like New York have built up such a burdensome bureaucracy that frankly, they don't do enough to help people get back to work and back to supporting themselves. So what we did was a compassionate response. If you're dealing with a disability, a mental health, a physical health, if you're pregnant, if you have children, if you're a senior citizen, there's no change. There's no expectation that any of the changes. If you're a veteran, it does. We don't put new burden on you. If you're a foster child, we don't put new expectations on you. But if you're an able-bodied single adult up to 54 years of age, which, by the way, now I approach 48, I can tell you is not terribly old. Helping you find work and getting you back into the workforce benefits the community, benefits the economy, and more importantly, benefits you. And so we were careful in that. But let me also say, I'm very happy. There's three sentences in the Fiscal Responsibility Act that I wrote, and it helped change the mission statement of social service agencies that provide food stamps. They've gotten too comfortable, state agencies in particular, counties in New York, when it comes to distributing food stamps. The agencies themselves become too comfortable fueling their own bureaucracy and not helping people find work. The language that we inserted says to them, we're changing the mission statement. You got to go out there as agencies and actually help people. Help them navigate the maze that the welfare system has created. Help them find their way to job training, financial literacy, and work. Help them stay in a job. I wrote that language. And I wrote it because I lived it growing up on food stamps, and I wrote it because administering the social service agency here in New York State, I can tell you, New York takes these federal dollars, builds up a bureaucracy, and is doing less and less to compassionately help people find their way to independence. We want that to happen. It's in everyone's best interest, especially the person who needs that temporary help.
Congressman Mark Molinaro is a first-term Republican from New York's 19th District. Thank you for the time, Congressman. When we come back the next time, let's talk about military health care.
Great.